Josh Allen making a heavy, heavy case for MVP and another big, big, big time win for the Bills as they put up another big, 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 big time game. Eagles making their case to get the one seed with a big win against the Steelers. Big. That's going to be the trend for the episode today. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast, another Tuesday episode brought to you by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros, Adam Wright. Boy, another good week of football. Another good week of football, to say the least. And for the second straight week, the Bills in another shootout, but this time they're on the right end of things. 48-42 victory over the Lions. And it was a little testy, a little bit of a very testy game, to say the least, at least for what seemed like a good portion of it. Josh Allen, 23 for 34, two passing touchdowns, 362 yards, along with two rushing touchdowns. And last week had three passing touchdowns and three rushing touchdowns. Jesus Christ. If you want to make a case for MVP, Josh Allen has been doing that the last, you could probably say the last 4 weeks. It's been insane. This is now, I'm not even going to count it out, but there's only two games this year where the Bills didn't reach 30 points. And that was when they lost back-to-back games against the Ravens and the Texans. They lost 35-10 to the Ravens, lost 23-20 to the Texans. And this is also back-to-back games where they put up 40-plus points as well. This Bills offense, it's insane to think about how the Bills going into this year. Everyone said this is probably going to be a rebuilding year. This can be a bridge year into next year. But Josh Allen has taken this team on his back and has done things that I don't think anyone thought that Josh Allen. We all know that Josh Allen is that guy. He is that guy in terms of being a top three quarterback. But he has taken this to a whole new level. 25 passing touchdowns to 5 interceptions, over 30 plus total touchdowns, 36 total touchdowns, 3,300 yards, 64% completion percentage. And his leading receiver right now is Khalil Shakir, and he's not even at 1,000 receiving yards. James Cook has been a great running back, 13 rushing touchdowns and almost 1,000 yards. He's probably going to crack 1,200 this year. All around, amazing performance. What are you guys' thoughts on the Bills? I want to wait on the Lions for a sec. I just want to showcase how, it hurts as a Pats fan to say it, to showcase it, but it's hard to deny how good the Bills are. And it feels like that them and probably the Eagles, and we're going to get to them later, are probably the top two contenders for the Super Bowl this year at this point.
Yeah, well, we talked about it a lot over during the Friday episode, but we basically said throw away everything we said about the Bills before this season started. All of us basically counted them out as a Super Bowl contender. We had them, for the most part, as a playoff team, but we thought they would just be very mediocre, just get by. Josh Allen would elevate this team to the point where they'd be competitive and it would be a down year. Throw all of that away. Josh Allen has played at such a high level that he's just carried this team into an 11-3 record. You're still in contention for the number one seed. And you're doing it with really not much to work with at all. Amari Cooper has been in and out of the lineup. Even when he is there, he's a shell of his former self. Keon Coleman is nothing like what they were expecting him to be, being their first draft choice in the draft. I like Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox, but are those guys who are going to elevate a quarterback? Is that going to be a top target? Absolutely not. Khalil Shakir is a solid player, but I see him as a two above anything else. So you look at this entire Bills team, and they've done the opposite of what everyone expected that they would be. And it's really amazing. If Josh Allen wins league MVP, he certainly deserves it.
CJ?
I know that all the Ravens fans of the world are going to be extremely upset when Josh Allen gets MVP because, oh, Lamar's stats are better. But you have to look at what Josh Allen is doing. His top receiver is Khalil Shakir, who Adam mentioned it. At best, he's a high-end two. James Cook's a solid running back, but he's still iffy and is still, I would say, more of a receiver in a running back's body than anything else. Kincaid and Knox are fine. Keon Coleman has been, at best, And a lot of people don't talk about for the Bills, the defense. This defense got picked clean. It's like free agency took the Bills defense on the date, and the Bills defense woke up with a scar on its side and a bath full of ice, if you get it. But that's the thing. They got completely picked apart, and yet, despite the fact that they lost Poyer, they lost Hyde, they lost Tre'Davious White, they lost Leonard Floyd. And correct me if I'm wrong, they also lost TJ Edwards as well. You know, not him, the other linebacker. They lost Tremaine Edmonds like 2 years ago because, yeah, two linebackers went to the Bears. Like 2 years ago, they lost Edmonds. Like, yeah, this is the fact that, Matt Milano, surprise, surprise, has been hurt. This Bills team just has so much fight in them, you know? And even as a Pats fan, I got to tip my cap to it. This is what they have done with this much is just insane. And some people will say, oh, you know, that's just how the game playing. It's not, because don't get me wrong, Sean McDermott, their head coach, is still an idiot. This has been on display many times throughout the year, but this is all Josh Allen. Josh Allen is like Atlas. He's got the weight of his world on his shoulders, and he will continue to make plays. And honestly, the fact he's doing more with less is so impressive, because you have other quarterbacks in this league that have all the weapons in the world and do nothing. For example, look at the Seahawks, Geno Smith. Sure, he's not on Allen's level, but he is DK Metcalf and Jackson Smith and Jigba and Tyler Lockett and Noah Fant and Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet, and they're barely alive in the division. Heck, look at the AFC East, Tua Tagovailoa. Granted, he got brain blasted, but even when he comes back, you know, you still have Tyreek Hill, and you still have Jaylen Waddle and Devon Achan, and they can't even touch Allen. So when you see other quarterbacks in the league not with infinitely more than Allen has, and Allen can still outperform them, that's got to be immensely special. And like I said, special shout out to the defense as well for literally getting picked clean this free agency and still just not missing a beat. If anything, playing a little better.
I would say that the last two games are probably a little suspect, though, in terms of the Bills, just because they've...
Yeah, fair, but I'm talking about, like, as a big picture. I mean,
yeah.
They were going up against some of the best offenses in the league, but...
Yeah. I was just about to say that. They did go up against the Rams with Puka and Kupp, Stafford and Kyren Williams, and, of course, this week with probably... not probably, it is the best offense in the league with Goff, Monra, and Devin Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs. And I guess that's your segue into Detroit. I'm like, impressive that Buffalo was able to get this win. And I think everyone knew that this is exactly the type of game everyone was expecting. But in terms of the Lions, Jesus Christ, they can't get away from the injury bug. David Montgomery just got ruled out for the year, torn MCL. And now Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be the bell cow back for the remainder of the season. And Now, I hate these rushing stats, 15 carries, 48 yards, and a touchdown total, but this is a game where you had to just throw it all over the yard. Jared Goff, 38 for 59, 5 touchdowns, 494 yards passing. Monra St. Brown had a really good day, and he was due for one as well. Hadn't scored in the last few games, ended up with a touchdown on 14 catches, 193 yards. Sam Laporta, 7 catches, 111 yards. Tim Patrick now with a touchdown in back-to-back games. This was still a great day for the offense, but the injuries just keep killing them over and over and over again. It's just insane to me. And I think the other big turning point for the Lions in this game, of course, in the fourth quarter, 12 minutes left, you're down 10, and you go for the onside kick. If we're still in the old kickoff rules from last year and you tried to get the surprise onside kick, then that probably would have been better. And honestly, if the Lions even succeeded on the onside kick, the narrative would have been completely different. Everyone would still be saying Dan Campbell has balls of steel, which he still does. But I mean, we're talking about an onside kick when you're down 10 with 12 minutes left, and obviously you fail and the Bills bring it out to your own 15. So bad. Defense being shit. The offense still looks great. Be interesting to see what they do without David Montgomery, but the Lions are in deeper shit than I think anyone could have ever imagined. Guys, think
this NFL season sucks. Like, it's actually, the football is really bad, and the little good football that we get, the teams that are really good this year get hurt. And that's literally the entire gist of the 2024 NFL season. And the Lions were the few bright spots of this year, and here we are. The injuries continue to pile up, and now it's leaked over to the offense. David Montgomery is now gone for the season, so it's literally just Jahmyr Gibbs working in that backfield. God forbid he gets hurt too, and then you become a one-dimensional team. And then suddenly you're not a team anymore that can beat others in different ways. You have to rely on the passing game, which makes you predictable. And we haven't talked really enough about that Lions defense. We've been saying it was solid all season long, and it has, but sometimes the best defense is a good offense. If you pour on points on the other team, then they can only attack you in one way, which is throwing the ball. It makes you more predictable. So that therefore makes the team a lot easier to defend. So when you look at it that way, and you look at all of the personnel that they've lost, I wouldn't be surprised if they're out a lot sooner than we thought they would be. I mean, who are they, even a slam dunk to make the conference championship anymore? Are they? Because the Eagles are playing pretty good football right now.
I don't know. I think that with the Lions offense alone, they're still contenders for the NFC championship, but that defense is still...
Yeah, they're contenders, but they were basically a shoe-in before this game.
Yeah.
Like... I'm sorry, but you look at the Eagles. The Vikings have been a formidable team. I mean, the Buccaneers already pulled an upset round one last year. Why wouldn't they be able to do it this year? The Rams are a solid team, too. They've won a Super Bowl a few years ago. I don't rule out an upset early. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just pissed off that things have worked out the way they've worked out for Detroit this year, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. This was the most well-rounded, talented Lions team going into the season in their franchise history, and they're all hurt. Like, this was their year to win the Super Bowl, and here we are. You've lost almost all of your starters on defense. And it's starting to leak over to the offense. You lost one of your top running backs, your top scoring back. He was the guy scoring all the touchdowns. Just pissing me off.
CJ?
I'd like to pose you a different question. You said, are they even a shoe-in to make the NFC Championship game? Adam, I'll do you one better. Are they even a shoe-in to win their own division? Don't look now, but the Vikings are licking their chops right behind you.
They're actually right there, yeah.
Yeah, they are. For those of you at home who just don't have your phone on you right now, unless you're watching it on your phone, that's weird, but pretend I didn't say anything. You're 12-2. You're both 12-2. The Lions right now have tiebreaker, but let's take a gander at their schedule. Lions, next, you have the Bears. You're in Chicago. Divisional games are always weird. And granted, Caleb Williams is looking like a defeated man out there. But need I remind you all in Detroit about what happened on Thanksgiving, how you survived due to the fact that Matt Eberflus has a wind-up symbol monkey where his brain used to be? And then you're in San Francisco. Now, on paper, that's a game you should win. However, this is also an injury bowl where they're just as banged up as you are. And then finally, your last game, you're hosting the Vikings. And make no mistake, the Minnesota Vikings are smelling blood in the water right behind you. Counterpoint for the Vikings, they're a little tougher. Next, they're going to be in Seattle, which is a game they should win. They're going to be hosting Green Bay. That's going to be an interesting game. But with home field advantage, I think they might be able to pull it out. Then they're going to be in the lot in Detroit. So the Vikings, Lions, you're lucky here. The Vikings have a much harder schedule to end the year than you do. There is no reason for you to lose. But like I said, the Vikings are literally just licking their chops right behind you. And when you look at the NFC as a whole, the Eagles are licking their chops right behind you as well. Just the Sharks are smelling blood in the water. And the worst part is, it's not their fault. Look, we can make fun of the fourth down all we want, like that Dan Campbell likes to go for. We can make fun of the onside kick thing, which, on a side note, I said over the offseason, the whole thing about where you have to declare your intention to go for an onside kick, that's weak, and whoever thought of that should never be employed by any company in the United States again. That's in your
hand. Agreed. There. Agreed.
I know you all agree. We all think that's stupid. But yeah, that aside, just no, Dan Campbell's aggression aside, this isn't really anything that the Lions could have prevented. Just injuries suck. That's really all you can say about the Lions. Every week, it's just like the injury gods hack into them with a meat cleaver. It's insane. And that already, and look, forget, you know, David Montgomery. Aleem McNeil is done for the year. Carlton Davis, at best, will return to the NFC Championship, if you even make it there. Aiden Hutchinson, the only way he comes back is if you make the Super Bowl. He said he's going to be back if you make the Super Bowl. But same thing with Alex Anzalone as well. And Khalif Raymond, I'm pretty sure, is done for the year too. Like, literally since the word go, the Lions have just been falling apart. And I may have said this in an earlier episode, but I'll leave you with this. Detroit, look at me. It might get worse before it gets better, because this offseason, it's a matter of when, not if, you lose Ben Johnson, your offensive coordinator. And I have said, and I know I've said this many times in the show about teams struggling after they lose a really good coordinator. If you're the Lions, you cannot fall into that same trap. You cannot let that be you. Because when you lose Ben Johnson, and if you whiff on the next hiring, the Vikings and the Packers are going to overtake you. I don't make the rules. Like, I feel like you really had to, and I know I actually did say this to both of you off camera weeks ago. But the Lions need to win the Super Bowl, because the road's going to get a lot tougher when they lose Ben Johnson. And
yeah,
say it with me, kids. You can't have blank in Detroit.
Yeah. And that, you know, we talk about the NFC West and how wild that is. And it's basically whoever wins the division is making the playoffs. But you look at the NFC North, and you have the Lions, Vikings, and Packers all set to make the playoffs, essentially. Obviously, still a few weeks left in the season, but they're all basically shoe-ins. Vikings and Lions have already clinched. Packers are going to clinch. And really, it's the difference between potentially having a home field advantage the entirety of the playoffs versus being on the road the entire playoffs. And the Vikings, as you mentioned, CJ, they're licking their chops, seeing how beat up the Lions are. The Vikings are, I can't think of a single injury that's on their team right now. Aaron Jones, he's kind of here and there in terms of the injury bug. It's like probably once every five games.
Christian Darrisaw.
Yeah.
Christian Darrisaw.
Oh, yeah. And TJ Hockenson was out for the first part of the season as well.
But he's back now.
Yep. Vikings, besides that one injury, they're ready to go. They could be the Super Bowl contenders this year. And this goes to a point that I made, I think, a couple weeks ago. I think it was with CJ. I think Adam was out for this one. But I think this is just more of an overall storyline that this is probably the most wide open the Super Bowl contention has been in probably since 2017. But yeah, and yeah. It's a point that Adam made. Like the Lions are looking pretty faulty now. The Eagles are right at their heels. Same thing with the Vikings. The Packers are in there. The Commanders are feisty. The Seattle Seahawks are fighting with the Rams for a playoff spot, and the Rams offense is still looking like world beaters. Tampa Bay's turned the corner and they're looking amazing. Look on the AFC side. The Chiefs don't know what the fuck's going on with them. Mahomes is going to be out for the next few weeks. The Bills are looking like they're on top of the world. The Steelers, they have their days, but they also have their bad days. The Texans, God knows what's going on with them. Ravens, you could say the same fucking thing. The Broncos are frisky. The Chargers were right there, but not anymore. I mean, the Chargers are probably going to still make the playoffs, but God knows if they're going to win a playoff game. It's wide open this year. It is wide open, but that's all I got for that. If you guys, unless you guys wanted to add anything.
I got nothing else.
Pretty much nailed it on the head. You know, this just sucks.
Yeah. I think that's just more of a culmination in narrative of how the NFL is being run as a whole, as what could explain all these injuries and why the NFL maybe sucks now. But that can be a discussion for maybe the end of the season. But right now we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Eagles in their big win over Pittsburgh in the Battle of Pennsylvania. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that sixth or seventh spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros, Adam Wright. Move on to the next topic. And it was another game that everyone had their eyes set on. It was the Eagles and the Steelers. And really, this all came down to time of possession and who was going to shoot themselves in the foot more. And that's basically what the Steelers did. They shot themselves in the foot more often than not. Two fumbles, one of them being lost. The Eagles had fumbles of their own as well. But for the Steelers, they could not get out of their own way. And Philadelphia dominated time of possession, 39 minutes, 52 seconds to 20 minutes, 8 seconds. 401 yards total for the Eagles, 163 for the Steelers. A.J. Brown, a week after bitching out his quarterback, 8 catches, 110 yards, and a touchdown. And let me read the entire fourth quarter for you guys. This was the entire fourth quarter. All right. You guys ready? Are you ready? Because this is insane. Start of the third quarter. I'm going to read the second half, actually. Start of the third quarter. Eagles start with a field goal. 13 play drive, 7 minutes. Steelers, 2 minute drive, 4 plays, fumble. Next drive, Eagles, 13 plays, 6.5 minutes, touchdown. Next drive, Steelers, 7 plays, 24 yards, 3 minutes, 48 seconds, and a punt. The Eagles ended the game on a 21-play drive that went 88 yards and took 10 minutes and 29 seconds. They got the ball with 10 minutes and 29 seconds in the fourth quarter and didn't give it back. That was basically the name of the game. The Steelers could not get off the field. They could not get off the field. Eagles were 10 for 17 on third down, including one fourth down conversion. And this is a Steelers defense that's still pretty damn good. This is a damn good defense. But Philly's offense, they just had the better game plan in this one. That's all it really was. They were able to keep that defense on the field, on top of Philly's defense also making their own stops. But that's just the name of the game at that point, was ball control. And the Eagles got the job done. And now they are right there with the Lions. Both teams now 11-2. Just like what we were talking about right before we went to break. They're right there. They are right there. They could, one more loss for the Lions, and the Eagles are in the number one seed. And looking at the road ahead for the Eagles in this one, Commanders, Cowboys, Giants. Who knows what's going to happen with the Washington game next week? They're in Washington, but you can imagine that they're going to mop the floor with Dallas and the Giants. Now, there's still the question on if Jalen Hurts is still the guy, this and that. But the fact of the matter is, he had a good game this week. And that's your storyline. That's your storyline. Jalen Hurts had a good game this week. Thoughts from you, fellas, before we touch on the Steelers, if we even want to touch on Pittsburgh.
With how well the Eagles are playing, the conspiracy theorist in me is saying that that whole fiasco within the locker room was just made up. I'm serious. Like, somebody was looking for some sort of bulletin material to kind of get, just kick him into a second gear in the final stretch of the season. And they're like, why don't we just do this? I'm serious. They've been playing so well, and there's no sign that there ever was a locker room issue. I know that there was a couple of things that a couple players said, but like, players talk like that. I'm sorry, but they've been playing so well, and they've seen the chemistry on the field looks perfectly fine. I don't think that there's an issue. And this was perfectly evident in the game. The defense played awesome. 13 points allowed to Pittsburgh. They dominated time of possession. They scored 27 points. Their passing offense was really good. And Saquon Barkley is still fine. I mean, this wasn't a world-beating game for him.
This was not a Saquon game by any means. They didn't need this to be a Saquon game.
Right. You're playing against a good Steelers defense. I wouldn't expect you to drop 40. I wouldn't expect this to be a running game, because the Steelers have a very good front seven. This is a team that can stop the run. So you didn't really need Saquon Barkley to do that much. He could take a back seat. And like we used to say about the Lions, and we may not be able to say ever again, this team can beat teams in many different ways. And here we saw it. Passing game this time. Rushing game a couple weeks ago. You can also win on defense. And here we are. The Eagles are a Super Bowl contender. We went from Nick Sirianni being on borrowed time and who wants it less against the fucking New Orleans Saints to when are they playing in the conference championship? Complete 180 turn, and all the credit to the Eagles here.
Yeah, Philly deserves like a lot of credit about how they're able to turn it around, you know. Nick Sirianni, I wouldn't say has his head screwed on right, but he's able to take that child in him and just squish him down, you know. Of course, you probably saw Sirianni and like the defensive line coach screaming at each other, but hey, doesn't matter when you're winning, am I right? So, finally, granted, Brandon Graham was talking about how soured the Hurts-Brown relationship is. This should put it to bed. Keyword is should. But yeah, overall it was great because the Steelers effectively, I wouldn't say stopped Saquon, but they were able to put a lid on him for most of the game. They were not even averaging 4 yards a carry, 19 carries, 65 yards. But what we got to talk about is the Eagles' defense. So you're going against the Steelers' offense. The Steelers are a grab bag. Even when they're winning, you never know what you're going to get. I mean, 1 week they hang 40 on the Bengals, and then let's just say this week they only drop 13. Russell Wilson was effectively silenced, only 14 for 22, 128 yards, and a touchdown. No ball carrier for Pittsburgh outside of Cordero Patterson, who had 2 carries for 9 yards, got over 4 yards a carry. Najee Harris, literally 6 carries, 14 yards, and that play, you know the play. Pittsburgh's best receiver on the day was Calvin Austin. So you got to credit Philly for that, about how Philly went out and they just shut them down. And once again, that's more of a credit to the Eagles defense, where you had guys like Zach Bond and N'Kobe Dean just flying around the field, sacked Russell Wilson twice with Nolan Smith and Josh Sweat both getting one. Like I said, it was just a good, it wasn't the flashiest win, but it was a good team win. And when Hurts plays like this, I can't stress enough how important that is, because one of our fears for Philly was that what happens when they get behind, right? And you can't just lean on the running game. Stuff like this, consider it like if you're in the military, this is a training drill. Right. This is a run through of, all right, what do we do? You know, just like kind of like air out the arm a bit, you know, just keep the wheels oiled, you know, stuff like that. And obviously for Philly, we need to talk about the implications that this game has for down the road, because as mentioned earlier, we all know this, they're looking their chops behind the Lions. The Lions are looking really weak right now. Next, they're going to be at Washington. My instinct tells me that's going to be a tough game. You know, solely because I know the Commanders are, I wouldn't say they're like scary, but they're a plucky team, you know.
They're frisky.
They're frisky. They're plucky. They're going to make you sweat, but you know. But Philly should beat them, even though it's in Washington. Next, you're hosting the Cowboys, and that's a team that's just given up entirely. And then you're hosting the Giants, which you want to talk about another team that's given up entirely. So, yeah, even though you have the rest of your division in your final three games, barring some ridiculous self-imposed nonsense, you should win, right? And that is just what I think. I mean, it's kind of business as usual in Philly, but this game was good to make teams, let's just say, think twice before they run commit the entire game to say, hey, you may have forgotten, but we still have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, and they're pretty darn good at what they do.
For sure. For sure. I mean, didn't even talk about Devontae Smith, but he had 11 catches for over 100 yards himself. You look at the stats in general, Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown totaled for 19 of Jalen Hurts' 25 completions. So that's pretty fucking good, to say the least. And A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith also combined for 219 total yards and 2 touchdowns on 23 targets. Looking at the Steelers, you know, they were without George Pickens, but I feel like the offense for Pittsburgh wasn't going to do a whole lot anyways, regardless if Pickens was in. Obviously, they were missing him, considering that their top target was Calvin Austin in this game. And Pat Freiermuth had the only receiving touchdown for Pittsburgh, or the only touchdown, I should say, for Pittsburgh in this game as well. And this was the culmination of things that Pittsburgh, it's been the way Pittsburgh has been playing. You don't really know which team you're going to get. As you mentioned, CJ, they go from putting up 40 plus on a bad Bengals defense to only putting up 13 on a good Philly defense. And now they got a division, a game that's basically going to be deciding where the division goes next week against Baltimore and then the Chiefs and the Bengals. They might not have to deal with Mahomes on Christmas Day, which would be good. And then they have a bad Bengals defense again to end the season. So there's that. And then you also have TJ Watt also missing half the game due to an injury. So there's a lot of things that Pittsburgh is definitely going to be. It's definitely not a good look for Pittsburgh for the last 3 weeks of the season. And seeing that George Pickens has missed now 2 weeks in a row with a hamstring injury, there's even potential that he misses next week with a hamstring injury. You never know. And Lord knows what's happening with TJ Watt. So a lot of moving parts that could completely derail Pittsburgh's, a potential Pittsburgh playoff run, to say the least.
Yeah.
Thoughts from you guys?
I got nothing else. I'm good.
Adam, yeah. You got anything?
Pretty much set.
Cool. That's good. Well, this is going to be a shorter episode for us today on this Tuesday night. As coming up next to round it out, the Week 15 top three, bottom three. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. R88 Radio, Secret Weapon Consulting, Chris Kostich, Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros. Our final topic of the day, Week 15, top three, bottom three. I'm going to start with the top three. Starting out with the Buccaneers. Big time win against the Chargers this week. Chargers are also going to our first team on the bottom three. We're going to get to them in a moment. But a 40-17 win for Tampa Bay. Baker Mayfield went off 22-27, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. And what a complete turnaround for Tampa Bay as they improved to 8-6. They're still in first place in the NFC South with a game above Atlanta. They go from losing 5 of 6. They get Mike Evans back, and they've won now 4 games in a row. With a Sunday night football matchup against Dallas next week. And all things are looking up for them. And Mike Evans, what a day for him, too. 2 touchdowns on 9 catches, 159 yards. Bucky Irving had a great day, 15 carries, 117 yards. But Baker Mayfield was the big story in this one. Now, the Chargers, first team on the bottom three. 17 points against the Buccaneers. And you could tell that this team is hurting without J.K. Dobbins. And it just was not a good game. This was a game of basically the storyline being of two teams that are going in opposite directions. Now, you could also say that the Chargers in the last 4 games have had to play some pretty tough teams. Baltimore, Kansas City, Tampa Bay. Atlanta. I mean, even them winning against Atlanta, they did not look good doing so. So you could say that it's been a tough last 4 weeks, and it's going to be a tough 5 weeks because now they got a primetime game against Denver in 2 days, which honestly, we could probably even touch on that for a little bit after this. But in terms of that, it's 5 weeks where you're on the potential of losing 4 or 5. They've lost 3 of 4 right now. And they're kind of looking like they might not make it. I mean, they're probably going to make the playoffs, most likely. But in terms of actually making a run at it, it's not looking good. Thoughts from you fellas on those two teams?
Well, when you look at these two teams, I mean, they're in kind of similar situations where they're both so far this season overperforming based on their expectations. The Chargers, we didn't expect were even going to be a playoff team. Now they're in the thick of the playoff race. The Buccaneers right now have the 3 seed, and I love the career renaissance that Baker Mayfield is experiencing. I thought it peaked last year, but clearly he just experienced a new high. I mean, he's going to flirt with 40 touchdown passes. A Buccaneers quarterback possibly throwing for 40 touchdowns.
That's not named Tom Brady.
I was about to say, you would think that his name would be Tom Brady. No, Baker Mayfield, of all players. Yes, the former number one overall pick who almost played his way out of the league like 5 minutes ago is now about to throw for 40 touchdown passes and has clearly found a new home here in Tampa Bay. They'll never let him leave. I mean, this guy has – I don't know what it was. I think I know what it is that changed the culture in Tampa. I think I know what it is. But – the fact that since Tom Brady retired, they're still winning. He did something once during his time there that made that organization think in a very different way. I mean, they're re-signing star players. They're drafting well. They're winning games. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers now have winning expectations year in, year out. When was the last time we could say that about this Buccaneers team? It's awesome.
CJ?
So this was a must-win game for both teams because the Chargers, look, the Chiefs have won your division. You're just trying to swipe a playoff spot from the rest. Meanwhile, the Bucs are trying to win their division because the NFC South, stop me if you've heard this one before, is wide open and not in the good way. You know, because every team just does, you know, their best choke impression. It's like, no, you take it. No, you take it, you know? And, oh, my God. Baker Mayfield just came out and was slinging the rock from the whistle. I mean, literally from the first whistle. And, oh, my. And, you know, Mike Evans had a day. Just, you know, Baker Mayfield, who, like we said, you know, almost flamed out and then just didn't, you know. You got to be proud of that. And then there's the Chargers. It's a tale of two teams, really. They're two opposites looking at each other in the mirror because Baker, man, weapons aplenty, you know. Mike Evans, Bucky Irving, Kate Otten looks like a young up-and-comer. You know, just toss it to all of them. And then you got Justin Herbert. Can't even have Ladd McConkey. The best you can do is Quentin Johnston, and that is all you get. Also, J.K. Dobbins is hurt, too, because the football gods are still not done being angry at the Chargers yet.
And have you – I'm sorry.
No.
I was just going to add to compliment your take, but have you noticed that they've stopped winning games ever since they lost J.K. Dobbins?
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's not lost on me. I mean – because we all love Gus Edwards, but he's a number two.
Harbaugh wanted to turn this into a more dink and dunk run first team when he first got here, and he did it well. But now that he doesn't have the guy to do it with, not looking good.
Yep, almost like you need an elite running back to be a run first team. A novel concept, I know, but even still, like I don't. On a side note, why would you want to be a run first team with Justin Herbert? I mean, that I'll never understand that. But yeah, but once again, just Herbert. It's like, you know how we
Herbert's
say all
beat up in his own right too.
Yeah, huh? Yeah.
He's also very beat up. Sorry.
No, Herbert's playing through an injury, but I just think it's interesting how we as fans say, oh my God, let this QB cook. Meanwhile, Baker has some of the nicest ingredients procured from different parts of the world. And Herbert, like I said, cupboard's bare, can't do anything. He's going to have to eat sleep. You know, that's basically what it's come down to. And, you know, it's not the Bucs defense are world beaters. I mean, I think they're underrated. They're better than I think they're given credit for. But for the Chargers, I feel like if you had Ladd McConkey and J.K. Dobbins, maybe you win. Maybe. Then again, it was
they
like
Ladd. They had Ladd.
Wait, they did?
Yeah, he had five catches, 58 yards, and a touchdown.
Oh, yeah. No, you're cool. I take that back. I mean, even if you have J.K. Dobbins at best, that's another score or two, which still doesn't win you the game. But I digress.
Yeah, and like we said, that's basically the culmination of what the Chargers have become this part of the season. And I think that, like you mentioned, the elite running back, if J.K. Dobbins is actually healthy, he could turn into an elite running back. And I think that the overall consensus about the Chargers this year is that they're just a wide receiver one away from being world beaters at this point. Like, Ladd McConkey's great, but I think you just need a bona fide wide receiver one to take you where you need to go. And Justin Herbert's had a pretty solid season this year with what he's been given. He just threw his first interception, what, 11 games? Insane. Moving on, next team on the top three, the Bills. We talked about the Bills earlier. Josh Allen improving his MVP case, and another 40 piece that they put up this week against, this time, on top of all of that, beating a Super Bowl contending team like the Lions in the fashion that he did, and Josh Allen continuing to do amazing things as well. It feels like that the Bills, along with Josh Allen, are just breaking a new record every other day. Rounding out the top three, the Eagles, already just talked about them, but really solidifying themselves as a Super Bowl contender and maybe a Super Bowl favorite with the way the Lions are looking right now. And Jalen Hurts had a good game. Defense had a great game. A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, Saquon Barkley didn't even need to do much. But I digress. We talked it to death. Moving on to the last two teams in the bottom three. Starting with last Thursday night, the 49ers. Now, you could put this entire game in the bottom three because it was a 12-6 score, downpouring, but the Rams could at least move the football. They could at least move the football. Like, Matt Stafford didn't have the greatest stats, but Kyron Williams had 29 carries for 108 yards. Puka had 7 catches for 97 yards. Cooper Kupp didn't even have a catch in this game. And on top of that, the Rams averaged 4.6 yards per play. I'd say that's moving the football. And the Niners, given the same conditions, granted, this is, like we just got done saying, this is basically the 2020 49ers. They were without their top two running backs, but I don't know. In a season, and especially in this type of game where you needed a win amongst other things, they failed. They couldn't even come close to it. And Brock Purdy had a really bad interception in the fourth quarter that basically sealed the Niners' fate in this game. Thoughts from you, fellas?
49ers, they're so up and down in the past 5 years. Like, they're either really good, they're really bad, and there's really no in between. And this is, again, this is, yeah, this is the 2020 Steelers. And after, yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
2020 49ers, like, yeah, they got hit by the injury bug. But this year it's weird because they didn't get hit that hard. Like, not that hard. I know that they've had everybody cycle in and out of the lineup, but they haven't been without everybody for any really sort of stretch. And now we're sitting here, like, Debo Samuel is still there. George Kittle is. They didn't have Christian McCaffrey the entire year, but I also don't really think that a running back, I understand Christian McCaffrey is the best back in the game when he's healthy, but I'm also not high on running backs being a factor in your winning games. This is the year 2024 in the modern day NFL. You just need balance. You just need a good running game. And if your passing game is elite, then you're fine. It just becomes a luxury at that point, but still, that's a guy you were missing in the lineup. I just don't think they were hit as hard as we really think this year. And this team just looks off from losing the Super Bowl.
On top, yeah, you mentioned having all of your guys, and one of those guys being Fred Warner has been playing with a broken ankle for for since the Pats game, week three, whenever that was. CJ, you want to throw in a Adam?
I just want to clarify. I'm not saying that they haven't been hit hard by I'm talking about relative to the 2020 49ers team. That was really bad the way they got slammed. I'm not saying that they haven't faced injuries this season. That's I'm not disputing that at all. But like this feels like it's not bad enough for them to be losing like they are. That feels like it's not the driving factor. That's all I'm saying.
No, and I'll honestly build off of what you're saying and the fact that, like, compared to 2020, that 2020 season, they had zero chance of even making the playoffs. And then you take this year, and they actually do have a chance to win the playoffs or make the playoffs on top of winning the division still. But, like, the chances are so slim at this rate. CJ, you want to add to anything before we get to our final bottom three?
I mean, granted, it's all relative, but yeah, they've just been pile-drived with injuries. And, you know, we knew from week one when, you know, they said, oh, Chris McCaffrey's not going to be there. I feel like most of us just sat back, inhaled, and said, oh, this is going to be one of those games, one of those seasons, isn't it? And sure enough, it was. Seems like every so often the Niners just watch their entire team end up in the hospital ward. You know, they're probably going to end up in the same room as the Detroit Lions as far as injuries go. But yeah, but it goes beyond that. There's someone here that we the people have to point the finger at, and that is Deebo Samuel. This man couldn't catch COVID if he stripped naked in the Wuhan lab in 2020. I don't think you can understand. His hands are just made of stone and covered in butter. That's basically what. He can't catch anything. Trying to get him to go in an offense is like trying to start a 50s model car in a junkyard. Like, you can't get, I don't know what it is. And the worst part is that he either cannot or will not acknowledge that it is entirely his fault. Did you see he got community fact-checked on X where he's like, I'm not struggling, I just don't get the ball. And then X said, hey, fact-check, buddy, you lead your team in drops. This man has abandoned any desire to be a good football player. And I know what you're thinking, oh yeah, but they're loaded, but when Brandon Ayuk is gone and Christian McCaffrey is gone and George Kittle, you know, missed some time, but, you know, he's back. And then, you know, you're kind of the guy, like you kind of have to be, right? And yet here you are not being that guy. And on the flip side, there's Fred Warner. If I hear one more empty suit on ESPN, just get really excited about, he's playing through an ankle injury. Look at that grit. He is a black hole on defense. He is a net negative. And look, yeah, respect the grit. Yes, I grant you, I do. However, boys and
girls.
That's
hurting his team more than.
It's hurting his team more than if they missed him. He is slow. His agility is gone. You know why? Because he's playing through a fractured ankle and he should not. And here's the thing, right? The longer he plays on it, the longer it's going to take to heal and the more likely it's going to be that it doesn't heal quite right. So you might be screwing yourself for next season too. Just when you take these two factors with Warner and Samuel and just mix it together, you get just a clown show. And I know, like you said, they do technically have a shot at the playoffs, but no, you don't. I'm sorry. No, you don't. In my eyes, you are already eliminated.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's a good way to wrap that one up. Moving on to the final team in the bottom three, the Miami Dolphins. By some way of a miracle, the Dolphins are still in the playoff race. Pretty much on the outside looking in. But by God, they did not help themselves out at all this week. Now they currently sit in ninth in the AFC, two spots back, two games back from the Chargers. So if depending on how this next week goes, they're going to be eliminated in week 16. But in this game in question, only put up 12 points. In a game that the rest of the way you really cannot lose any games. And in the culmination of the fact that you lost Tua, the moment that you lost Tua, you're basically done for the season. And in this game, Tua had three interceptions, didn't crack 200 yards on 40 pass attempts, by the way. And your leading receiver was the combination of Jonnu Smith and Malik Washington, on top of Devon Achane, who had seven catches in this game as well. And you're going up against a Texans team that has been one of the most underwhelming offenses this season in terms of looking at last year compared to this year. And like the Texans didn't even have a good offensive game. They let up four sacks, and it really depends on how good of a day Joe Mixon has. And he only had 20 yards carrying in this game. So the Dolphins continuously shoot themselves in the foot by making it that they still can't beat a team that's 500 or better. And this was probably their best chance to beat a team that's 500 or better. And they completely squandered it. And somehow only lost by 8 points.
If Tua was healthy the whole season, I do believe that this Dolphins team would be in the playoffs right now, at least in the playoff race. They technically still are, but they'd at least be an above 500 team. Tua can't miss time because he is still capable of performances like this where, you know, you threw three picks and the game overall was just egregious. Usually if you're playing in a shootout or you're playing from behind, you end up throwing for a lot of yards, but he didn't even break 200 despite throwing the ball 40 times. I mean, that's just egregious. And I think Tyreek Hill, this is why wide receivers above 30, they always fall apart at some point. I know he's still a good back. He's still a good wide receiver, but he's clearly a decoy out there. The guy has kind of fallen off. And I don't know what to say. Like, if Tua wasn't hurt, they'd be in the playoffs, but even then they wouldn't be much to write home about. They'd probably be maybe two wins better. They'd be, let's say, instead of 6-8, they'd be 8-6. But again, at that point, like, who cares? Tyreek Hill still is a shell of himself, and Tua isn't much either. So this team is just in football purgatory right now.
Now, Adam might not have, or he might not know what to say. Oh, but I do. So if you've watched this show for the past year or so, you know where I stand on Mike McDaniel and them. And Tua, and look, I get the injury excuse. I understand it. However, I am a firm proponent of the phrase, your best ability is your availability. And Lord knows that Tua's best ability is not his availability. In fact, it's probably never been his availability, because, you know, this man's entire offseason workout revolves around him running headfirst into a brick wall. That's just kind of what he does. It's not a great plan, but it's a plan worthy of Tua, that much, I tell you. And the inexplicable fall off of Tyreek Hill needs to be studied. Like, look, I know he's busy having more kids, and so that's, all those child custody or child, what's it called? Child payment suits or whatever, that's probably eating up a lot of his time. Whatever, I could joke about that all day, but Jesus Christ, Miami is just not a serious team. And look, I've already driven home many times on this show, oh my God, McDaniel is now 3-13 against teams above 500. Oh my God, they can't win in the cold. But even if you do make the playoffs, I gotta look at Miami and say, or if they did, you know, if Tua's healthy, what's your plan? Because your ceiling is that you're a one and done. You're not winning the division, meaning you will get no home games. So, like, what exactly is the plan here? Just hope you squeak into the playoffs and hope it's, you know, the team you're going up against isn't above 500, it's in the heat. Like, what exactly are they trying to do in Miami? I have no idea. And even if you must blame injuries, my counterpoint is, were they really going to be that good regardless? Because I agree with Adam. I'm in lockstep there. At best, you probably win another game or two. I mean, that's pretty much it. This was a must-win game for Miami. If you wanted any shot to make the playoffs, you had to win this. And now, mathematically speaking, even if you win out, you probably won't make it. I don't care how soft your schedule is. You have reached a point in the season that no team wants to be in. Your fate is not in your hands alone. You do not control your own fate. Not only do you have to win out, you're going to need like three other teams to drop some games too. Which, is it possible? Yeah, but it's like finding a needle in a haystack. It's going to, you know, the odds are just not in your favor.
They would basically need the Broncos and the Chargers to lose out along with the Colts. I would say the Bengals, but the Dolphins currently have the edge over the Bengals at the moment in terms of conference record. By God, that whole month where Tua was out really shot him in the foot. Not like it was going to do much anyways. I was just looking at their schedule just to see how much of a difference it probably would have made. Obviously, so we're going to go from week two when they lose to the Bills. They're still going to lose to the Seahawks. Maybe they beat the Titans. Let's say they beat the Titans. Obviously, they're going to beat the Patriots. Maybe they lose to the Colts. Maybe they beat the Colts. Let's say they beat the Colts. And then they lose to the Cardinals, which is the first game that Tua is back. So basically we're saying that there's a possibility that they win two games and they turn themselves back to 6-8 or 8-6. Like, then you look at the last three on their schedule and you got the 49ers, the Browns, and the Jets. Like, to your point, CJ, they weren't going to make anything of this season anyways with where they were going to end up in the playoffs. They would have ended up having to travel to a team like Kansas City or Buffalo or Baltimore again, and or in this case, the Steelers, because they still have the upper hand in on the AFC North right now. But all cold weather teams, they would have had to travel to one of those four, and they would have lost in either of those four or at either of those four. So this season was going to be a lost season anyways for Miami, regardless of if Tua was going to be out or not. But that is the week 15 top three, bottom three. And that's all the scheduled content that we have for you tonight. Do you guys have anything you wanted to add? Any other news or storylines you wanted to add that, or that's worth adding before we wrap it up here today?
Start Michael Penix.
Yeah, Raheem Morris even called out Kirk Cousins. Michael Penix needs to start soon.
Yeah, I don't know if you're referring to his quote that just came out 37 minutes ago from Josh Kendall from The Athletic. Raheem Morris did not answer the "Is Kirk Cousins still your starting quarterback?" question. His quote: "We just got back. We still have to go through that process. All those things will happen over the course of the week. We didn't play well enough at the quarterback position." Well, you haven't played well enough in the quarterback position for the last,
or anywhere else,
for like the last 6 weeks. And looking at the stat line for Kirk Cousins in this game, 11 for 17, 112 yards, a touchdown, an interception. And like, he didn't have more completions than Desmond Ridder. Shit, he didn't even have more yards than Desmond Ridder. And that's really only because Desmond Ridder threw the ball more times. And you went up against the Raiders team that, for some reason, is still fighting. And it really came down to a last-minute Hail Mary that they ended up winning on. So, this is... Yeah, if we're going to go honorable mention for bottom three, I would just throw in the fucking Falcons for the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, basically. And let me tell you this. I firmly believe they only won because it was against the Raiders and Desmond Ridder. Yeah. Like, I believe there's a strong case to be made that they lose to the Giants, Patriots, and Jaguars too.
There's a strong case that Desmond Ridder did a better job of throwing the Falcons the football last night than Kirk Cousins did, and he had two interceptions.
Yeah. And that's the truth. Anyway, Adam.
Yeah, one last storyline. I think Joe Burrow himself might actually be a case for a destination for Cincinnati. He makes Cincinnati so attractive of an organization. Like, yep. Just him alone, that he may actually solely be the reason that T. Higgins stays. There's not a wide receiver in the league that doesn't want to catch passes from Joe Burrow. So why would T. Higgins go anywhere else?
Money.
And also be paired up with another elite wide receiver and an offensive line that's very much improved from when Joe Burrow started his career in Cincinnati. I mean, this is a hard situation to leave, kind of. I mean, the front office is a clown show. I'm not disputing that at all. But on offense, this is a hard team to leave. On offense.
Also probably wants to be wide receiver one, and there's a very real shock, because you know how wide receivers are. They're mostly divas, that he probably doesn't want to live in Chase's shadow, which, I mean, he might be okay with that, but I was saying the average receiver might want to. And even still, Mike Brown would have to open up the checkbook first, which, if you're a Bengals fan, do we really trust him to do that?
I'm not saying anything is going to happen. I'm just saying that we thought that T. Higgins was as good as gone, but in spite of missing a bunch of games this year, he's still on pace to catch for over 800 yards, which is crazy. If he played the whole season, he'd probably had like 1,200. And like, if you look at, it's a pretty good pitch. If Mike Brown were to sit down with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, you probably already lost Trey Hendrickson, but you say, look, if you work with us and you guys both stay, we can do our best to fix this defense. And if the defense is even just half improved, just middling, then we're going to be not only a playoff team, but also a Super Bowl contender next year. That's a pretty good pitch. It's a pitch that not many teams can actually make, especially since this is where he started his career. I'm not saying anything is going to happen. I'm just saying, what if it's not guaranteed that T. Higgins leaves? That's all.
Yeah, and realistically, like, let's take the Ravens defense, for example. If the Bengals had a quarter of what the Ravens defense had, then we're looking at Super Bowl contenders here. Because that's the Bengals in their Super Bowl run had a quarter of what Baltimore's defense had.
Like, we're after a couple of years where the Bengals have fallen back towards the bottom of the league, we've completely forgotten about the fact that Joe Burrow is one of the best quarterbacks in all of football. If the Bengals are at their peak, then I would argue Joe Burrow is second, third best. He's mentioned in the exact same breath as Allen and Mahomes. He's earned that much. Yeah. And certainly Lamar Jackson as well. This Bengals defense has just been that bad. But we don't give the Bengals offense enough credit this year.
Facts. Anything else you guys want to add? Actually, I have one thing that news that just came in. Michael Vick is now a college coach.
Sacramento State.
Just got official. There was word or rumor, I think Sunday, that he was in talks with Sacramento State, and now it's been confirmed. So the redemption arc of Michael Vick continues to grow.
Yeah, well, good for him. I hope he does well.
Well, we're talking Bill Belichick, Deion Sanders went to Colorado. Like, it seems like we're getting an invasion of former NFL players and former head coaches going to college. And it's not like they're even going to very well-known schools either. They're just going just to kind of create a new name for themselves, which, I mean, all the power to them. I don't really care. If they put these schools back on the map, if Bill Belichick makes UNC a powerhouse, then that's certainly going to be something to look at. But I mean, as of right now, I'm very indifferent, to be honest.
I mean, Lord knows if Belichick is even going to end up coaching at North Carolina. Apparently, there's a clause in his contract that says if the NFL comes calling, he's going.
Which just tells you that he's settled. Like, if that doesn't prove that he was just looking for control and he was just willing to do it anywhere. Like, you don't have a clause if you're going out and you're saying, well, if the NFL calls and gives me control, then I'm just going to them. It just tells me you were looking for anything.
Yeah. But that'll do it for this Tuesday episode of the Fumble Rooski podcast. 3 weeks left of the NFL season. Be sure to tune in on Friday where we'll give our week 16 picks and we'll also recap the Thursday night game of the Broncos and the Chargers. See if the Chargers can break their trend of losing three of their last four and see if the Broncos can extend their winning streak to 5. But that'll do it for us tonight. Course, thank you for listening. New episode on Friday at 5, and then of course Tuesdays at 7:30. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Google Podcast, and so much more. And be sure to follow our Instagram, FumbleRooski_podcast, and the TikTok, FumbleRooskiPod, to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, CJ Medeiros, Adam Wright, I'm Chris Kostich. We will see you on Friday. Over and out.
Can't come soon enough.